WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Samuel Popkin is a veteran of many presidential campaigns. He assisted George McGovern and Jimmy Carter in their bid for office and is currently a pollster and advisor to the Clinton campaign. Popkin is a professor of political science at the University of California in San Diego. He's also the author of The Reasoning Voter, in which he argues that campaigns are not useless fluff and voters are not the victims of media manipulation. According to Popkin, they can wade through the ads, the rhetoric, and the accusations to make a thoughtful and reasoned decision. We asked him to join us on Fresh Air today to comment on the Republican Party convention and talk about the issue of traditional family values. We began with his definition of a family.
In America, the family values that people really care about are long-term nurturing. Where do you, to paraphrase Robert Frost, the place where they have to take care of you when you show up at the doorstep. And it's the group of blood relatives, marriage relatives, friends, and acquaintances that are part of your support network.
What do you think is the appeal of family values in this 92 campaign?
The appeal in 92 is to try and paint the Democrats as Southern fried McGovern, to try and suggest that the generation of the 60s are still as out of touch with America as was painted in the 72 campaign. The people running the Republican campaign are people who cut their teeth in 72 and 76, when it was very easy for Republicans 20 years ago to say the Democrats represent, you know, breathless, zealous groups that don't know how to compromise and moderate their claims. And they're trying it again to get attention away from the economy.
You watched the convention last night, I'm sure, and certainly the topic was family values. What message did you read from the speeches that you heard?
The message I heard was, we are better than our platform. Read us, read our families, not our platform. I heard very clearly two wives trying to very much distance themselves from the platform and talk about their life separate from the platform. And I think that happened because as the Republican Party has painted itself into a corner on a few of the social issues, you've gotten into the extraordinary situation this year where neither the president or the vice president could apply their own platform to the lives of their children. And this created this great disjuncture where I think they tried to have the wives speak, both because it's important and the wives are articulate, but also because they want to put distance between themselves and a platform that they can't defend.
You're a pollster. I'm wondering whether you've even polled the public about how they think about family values and how they care about them.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of polling on the subject because this is a real problem. You've got two revolutions in America going on at once that we're all facing at the same time in middle age. One is the revolution that started in the 50s of women much more frequently working outside the home. This leads to a lot of crises of daycare, school hours, and managing home and family for both parents with children. At the same time, the benefits of Social Security, Medicare, and life expectancy mean that as we're doing daycare, we also have to worry about parent care and elderly care. So people are really concerned about whose job it is.
How does that translate into family values?
The reason the phrase family values is being used is very bluntly because a key core constituent element of the Republican dominance of the White House in the last 30 years has been the attachment to the economic conservatives of religious fundamentals who are alienated from the Democratic Party. And family values to them means an explicit, specific reading of the Bible. So you've got family values meaning two things today in America. For 11% of us or 10% of us, it means an extreme, exact, doctrinaire reading of what a family should be, a woman should be, and a parent should be. For the rest of us, it means coming to grips with the fact that we can't even pretend we've got an Ozzie and Harriet world anymore. We've got more of the kind of world Delia Ephron talks about in her books, where you have to decide at a wedding whether the grandchildren of your mother-in-law's deceased second husband should also be invited to the wedding.
If this is a small group, as you say, a core group of the Republican Party, how have they made this such an important issue and one that's being talked about even as we talk about it?
Well, I think there are two things. Number one, early this year, it appeared that we were going to have a three-way race for the presidency. And in a three-way race for the presidency, the fundamentalists represented a very strong third or more of what the Republicans needed to win the presidency. And so mugging Murphy Brown, you know, an all-out attack on Murphy Brown in a three-way race when you had a moderate pro-choice candidate in Ross Perot and another moderate pro-choice candidate in Bill Clinton, being conservative and fundamentalist had real appeal. The problem was that at the same time the Republicans were mugging Murphy Brown, they were also using a character assassination on Ross Perot and turning this into a two-way race. And I'm willing to go online as a scholar as well as a part of the campaign and say that when history writes the history of this campaign, mugging Murphy Brown and mugging Hillary Clinton will be the two single biggest Republican mistakes of this year.
But do you think there is some resonance with the public that people are feeling that there is something wrong with their life? They are concerned about what they see on television and in the movies. They're concerned about the numbers of pregnancy, the number of single mothers going on, and that people are beginning to ask themselves questions about their own values.
Yes.
and the nation's values.
Yes, I think that's very good. After this campaign is over and we go into a more reflective mode, there are going to be some very hard and difficult questions asked about one-parent, two-parent, three-parent, and four-parent families in America. What policy should be about either discouraging the mating patterns or encouraging better care of the children and putting it together.
Samuel Popkin is my guest. He's a professor of political science at the University of California at San Diego. He's also an advisor and a pollster to the Clinton campaign and the author of a book called The Reasoning Voter. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with Samuel Popkin, and he's an advisor and a pollster to the Clinton campaign. How much do you think this whole discussion of family values is an exercise in nostalgia?
Well, I think all programs of social change reach back, whether it's the Chinese Revolution, the Reagan Revolution, or the Democratic Party. You reassure people by talking about the past as you make the changes necessary so that people can feel that they're not somehow cutting their emotional umbilical cord to the past. And I think you see that in the very strong attempts now to have Barbara Bush play the role of Florence Nightingale and suggest that first ladies should really be grandmothers, not women of a new generation who have careers as well as family roles.
How much do you think Hillary Clinton is fair game? She's an attorney with a past. She's made speeches. She's written papers. How much do you think her writing, her thinking, should be involved in the campaign? Should be an issue in the campaign.
Well, when you say fair game, let me make it clear. I'm distinguishing the fair facts of her record from what, of course, are unfair attacks by Rich Bond and Dan, the attack puppy, Dan Quayle.
What do you see as unfair attacks?
Trying to paint Hillary Clinton as an enemy of the family, as a person who wants our children to sue us for malpractice if we don't let them go to the Gap on Saturday, as a person who's anti-family. And
she has written, and this is not going to be a very good paraphrase, to that effect, saying that the children do have rights under certain circumstances in which they could sue their parents.
Well, we've got this terrible problem in our legal culture. Now, when you talk about a child suing the parent, you can paint this as a horror story of your daughter suing you if you don't let her stay up late to watch Murphy Brown on television. But what this is intended for is the horrible, and this speaks to your earlier point of the disjuncture between how we live and how we dream. The real reason you need some rights for children is that there are children living in homes full of drugs, sexual abuse, physical abuse, and alcoholism. And without some presumptive rights for those children, it's going to be impossible to rescue them from these unlivable situations.
So how much would you say of what Hillary Clinton has talked about and written about is fair to criticize and analyze in this campaign?
Well, the reason I said that mugging Hillary is going to turn out to be as big a mistake as mugging Murphy Brown is twofold. Number one, the Republicans also want to paint the Democrats as anti-business and out of touch with the world of either big corporations or family firms. And Hillary is a board member, is on the board of directors of Country's Best Yogurt and of Walmart. And it's hard to paint, you know, an American folk hero like Sam Walton as somebody who puts young lefties on their board. And secondly, one of the biggest successes Hillary has had in Arkansas was to encourage people in Arkansas to adopt a program that comes, of all places, from Israel called the Home Instruction Program for Preschool Youth. This program is praised as an exemplar of what can be done to help young children in America by Barbara Bush and her first book, a book called First Teachers, which is a family literacy handbook. And here in this book, Hillary is praised. And I think it says something about the problems the Republican Party is having this year, that to satisfy the religious right, you have to attack Hillary as they position themselves for 1996 at the price of embarrassing Mrs. Bush and putting her in the position where she's supposed to go along with these unfair and vicious attacks on somebody she's publicly praised in print.
What issues do you think this race will be decided on?
I think more than anything else, the two big issues are the immediate short-term economic crises that a lot of people are feeling in the big industrial states in California, and maybe even more important, the long-term need to deal with the change from a world oriented to Europe and the Cold War to a world oriented more to Asia, more to economics, and more to global markets. That's the painful one.
You've written a book called The Reasoning Voter. The assumption in your title, obviously, is that voters can make reasonable decisions, can make reasonable choices. Do you believe that?
Yes, I do. I think, for one thing, people learn over time. I think, for another, they learn how to assess character. They learn how to tell from who your friends are and where you've been and what you've done, how they think about you for the future. I actually think sometimes that choosing a president isn't just a matter of looking at the policies and the principles, but it's almost a little bit like picking a babysitter to stay with your children when you're away. It's not just the positions the babysitter espouses when she says, yes, I believe in vegetables and I don't believe in sugar, but it's also a matter of, will this babysitter know how to dial 911 if there's an emergency? Will this babysitter never go out and leave the kids alone? Will this person know enough to handle anything that's going to come up that I don't know about? So it's a very, it's really a complicated job of giving a proxy to a person. And that process brings out both all the romanticism and idealism in us and also all of our cynicism.
Samuel Popkin is a pollster and advisor to the Clinton campaign. He teaches at the University of California at San Diego and is the author of The Reasoning Voter.